The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, with 1,200 premature deaths every year due to poor air quality, just who is most at risk and what has been done to protect those who are most vulnerable? And if your health has been jeopardised by state action or inaction, could you seek legal redress? Well, I'm joined by Rose Wall, CEO of Community Law and Mediation. Rose, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, to be quite honest, I had never heard this term, environmental injustice, before. So when was it coined and what's it all about?
Well, environmental justice, I suppose, from our perspective, looks at addressing the inequality of experience of climate change and other environmental harms, but also ensuring that climate action policies don't exacerbate existing inequalities. And it's kind of a growing movement that has been looked at more and more in recent times.
Now, how could the climate mitigation policies actually make things worse?
Well, in lots of ways, you know, with the closure of certain industries, there can be job loss, and also the introduction of carbon taxes and other measures, they can have a disproportionate impact on certain groups. So what we would advocate is that any policy measures that are taken with just transition and climate justice in mind.
It's a bit difficult, though, to understand that, say, you might feel you've been hard done by because they stop burning peat, you know, in the ESB station, for example, when, you know, that's, it's crazy, in fact, when you think about it, that you'd be burning peat. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
So how would, you know, people lose jobs, but then there are jobs being created, installing insulation and so on. But the idea that you might take legal action against a positive climate action seems strange.
Well, it's not just about taking legal action. It's just about making sure that the state in developing policies take into account the needs of particular groups and particular sections of society. So in adopting climate policies, we need to make sure that those voices are heard. But behind this policy initiative, I suppose, it's not that we're saying that climate action shouldn't be taken. And in fact, we're saying very strongly that climate action should be taken. And part of that, as you rightly said at the start of the programme, was around air quality. And we need to be taking more serious measures around that.
Now, sometimes there are things which are on the one hand, on the other hand. Now, I'll give an example. Bus Connects in Dublin, the idea is to have more buses running more freely so that more people take the bus rather than the private car. And people say, that's great. On the other hand, if you take away my front garden, I am now closer to a bus lane and I'm breathing in the diesel fumes. Who wins?
Well, you know, with any development decision like that, you know, there's a planning process that has to be gone through and people's voices need to be heard. And that's part of the planning process. And there is a balancing with all of these policy decisions. But I suppose from our perspective, there is urgent action that needs to be taken in relation to climate change and other environmental impacts, because we can see how those impacts are having a disproportionate effect on the groups that community law and mediation work with in particular. So the groups that we work with are communities experiencing social exclusion, inequality and disadvantage. And they are certainly disproportionately impacted by things like air quality, by things like flooding, by the environmental harms that we can see happening around the country.
Now, there are things that the state might do, for example, stopping the milling of peat and burning it. That's something they do. And then there's something they might not do that they should do. And flood mitigation measures would be an example of that, where there are towns that regularly flood or parts of towns, suburbs or whatever, and they do nothing. Now, there may be perfectly good reasons, planning reasons, engineering reasons why they do nothing. But is it your case that if someone gets flooded through state action or inaction, that the state has to answer?
Yes, potentially. And flooding is one issue that we're seeing. You know, we're setting up this centre and flooding is an issue that's already coming in the door to us. But so too are issues around water and air quality, which we know impact certain parts of the country and in fact certain groups more. So just looking at air quality, for example, that's something that has been looked at internationally in the US and in the UK. And we know that it impacts on certain groups more because of existing respiratory problems, because of where people live, because of where people can afford to live. And perhaps young people more, because there is this unknown effect on young children whose lung capacity can be permanently stunted and their health permanently damaged by exposure to pollutants at a young age. And recently there was that very tragic case in the UK, an inquest in London, which made history when it found that air pollution was a cause in death of a 9-year-old Ella, who died of respiratory failure after being exposed to excessive air pollution. And she had lived her whole life beside a busy road in a community where air pollution exceeded national and EU legal limits. So in situations such as that, you know, of course the state has a case to answer if their inaction has led to physical harm and in fact death to certain groups.
What happened in the case of Ella? I mean, did the parents take an action against either the local council or the state?
I suspect they will be. I mean, the inquest was only a number of weeks ago. So, you know, we'll see what happens out of that. But it did make history in finding that air pollution was a cause of death in you know, a young child.
OK. Now, when it comes to taking action, if, for example, you bought an apartment on the ground floor of an apartment block that happened to be built on a flooding plain, who's responsible?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it hasn't been litigated yet, and it's something that we're looking at. And it might, in fact, be something that's more appropriate to be handled through policy rather than litigation. But there are questions.
No. I'm saying I am living in that apartment. I'm getting flooded every year, and I can't get flooding insurance because of where I live. And yet the planners gave me permission, even though it would be well known that it was a flooding plain. The developer built it, even though the developer might have been aware, should have been aware, that it was built on a flooding plain. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I think you've rightly identified it. There are potential issues as to why planning permission was given in the first place, and there are potentially questions to be answered as to climate adaptation measures. So what measures have been taken and are being taken every year to try and prevent the flooding? So there are a few possibilities there, you know, looking at planning, looking at the developer, but also looking at the state's own reaction to our changing weather patterns.
Have there been any cases taken in the courts in this country based on environmental injustice?
No, not particularly around these issues. There was the big case in September, Climate Case Ireland, which specifically looked at our climate action plan and how specific and accountable that was. And that was a Supreme Court decision in September, and that really opened the door to kind of future rights-based claims in this area. So that's kind
What did that case involve, and what did the Supreme Court find?
So that was a case taken by Friends of the Environment, and it was looking at our climate mitigation plan, which, you know, didn't contain enough detail. It wasn't achieving enough. And we were basically suing the state based on what has happened internationally in other cases for failure to do sufficient, to take sufficient action in this regard.
And what was the outcome?
They were successful.
Yeah, I mean, if they're successful, they win. But what does it mean practically? What did the government have to do?
Well, it means practically going forward, the government can't be vague in their climate mitigation plans and in their climate action policies. They have to specifically set out targets and goals and plans. But the court, in looking at, you know, the law in this area, it did, in some of its commentary, open the door to individuals taking claims on the basis of the right to a healthy environment, or on how environmental harms such as pollution and climate change affect them and affect other rights.
The government will presumably claim Irish Water is the body charged with, not allowing filthy water to be made available for bathing, for example, and all that kind of thing. And they will say, listen, we inherited all this from the county councils. We're doing our best to catch up. So what do you do? I mean, if you want to bathe in a particular bathing place and they put up a sign saying this is not safe for bathing, is that sufficient for the state to protect itself?
Well, look, I mean, with any action that may or may not be taken, the court will look at what has been done, what's reasonable to be expected to be done. And so, you know, it's not simply enough to say that we inherited a problem and we're dealing with it as quickly as we can. You know, with climate change in particular, we're up against a very significant clock, and we have a lot to do in a relatively short period of time. So it's not simply enough to shrug your shoulders and say we're doing the best that we can. So, you know, that's the point of using the law. That's the point of giving communities a voice and arming them with the law to try and move things forward.
I'm just wondering how far back it goes, because you've been pointing out, and it's well documented, that that people who live in inner cities, and if you know, you go back to the 1950s, the 1960s, and so on, where you had smog, you had acid rain raining down upon the forest, all that sort of thing. And things have changed. We have the smoky fuel ban, which you know, being extended nationwide, improves things. How far back does the state's responsibility go? You know, if someone has at the moment emphysema because they lived in inner city Dublin for 70 years, can they point the finger and say, you owe me?
Well, they can look at, for example, EU obligations and national obligations, which have been, you know, signed up to in the last number of years, and whether, in fact, those obligations are being adhered to. So it's not simply about going back 70 years ago to you know, stuff that happened then. It's looking at what's happened in the last 5 years, in the last 10 years, and are current air quality standards at the level at which they should be.
No, I was just thinking of redress in the case of, say, of the mother and baby homes and the Magdalen laundries and so on. They go back decades to an era where none of the current politicians were actually serving politicians. None of the current councillors were serving councillors at the time. Do you know what I mean? How far back do you go to look to the responsibility of the state to compensate people who may have suffered?
Well, I mean, you know, individuals have a right, have a, you know, many rights, including a right to health and including a right to expect the state to, you know, adhere to certain standards. And the court, in looking at that, I mean, the court has to look at a whole range of factors in determining whether litigation is going to be successful. But one will be things like causation. You know, did the inaction of the state actually cause the particular harm that's being claimed? So, you know, it depends on the individual case, and the court will have to consider all the circumstances. Mm-hmm.
All right. It's a fascinating area. Rose, thank you very much for joining us. That's Rose Wall, CEO of Community Law and Mediation.